The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing in Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, and Chapter 12, The Way of Equality. Mid-page 714. These three ways coincide in spite of their separate starting points. First, by their inhibition of the normal reactions of the mind to the touches of outward things. Bahi Pashan. Secondly, by their separation of the self, or spirit, from the outward action of nature. But it is evident that our perfection will be greater and more embracingly complete if we can have a more active equality which will enable us not only to draw back from or confront the world in a detached and separated calm, but to return upon it and possess it in the power of the calm and equal spirit. This is possible because the world, nature, action are not in fact a quite separate thing, but a manifestation of the self, the all-soul, the divine. The reactions of the normal mind are a degradation of the divine values, which would, but for this degradation, make this truth evident to us, a falsification, an ignorance which alters their workings, an ignorance which starts from the involution of the self in a blind material nescience. Once we return to the full consciousness of self, of God, we can then put a true divine value on things and receive and act on them with the calm, joy, knowledge, seeing will of the Spirit. When we begin to do that, then the soul begins to have an equal joy in the universe, an equal will dealing with all energies, an equal knowledge which takes possession of the spiritual truth behind all the phenomena of this divine manifestation. It possesses the world, as the divine possesses it, in a fullness of the infinite light, power, and ananda. All this existence can, therefore, be approached by a yoga of positive and active in place of the negative and passive equality. This requires, first, a new knowledge, which is the knowledge of unity, to see all things as oneself, and to see all things in God, and God in all things. There is then a will of equal acceptance of all phenomena, all events, all happenings, all persons and forces as masks of the self, movements of the one energy, results of the one power in action, ruled by the one divine wisdom. And on the foundation of this will of greater knowledge, there grows a strength to meet everything with an untroubled soul and mind. There must be an identification of myself with the self of the universe, a vision and a feeling of oneness with all creatures, a perception of all forces and energies and results as the movement of this energy of myself, and therefore intimately my own. Not obviously of my ego self, which must be silenced, eliminated, cast away. Otherwise, this perfection cannot come, but of a greater impersonal or universal self with which I am now one. For my personality is now only one center of action of that universal self, but a center intimately in relation and unison with all other personalities, and also with all those other things which are to us only impersonal objects and forces. But, in fact, they also are powers of the one impersonal person, Purusha, God, Self, Spirit. My individuality is his, and is no longer a thing incompatible with or separated from universal being. It is itself universalized, a knower of the universal Ananda, and one with and a lover of all that it knows, acts on, and enjoys. For to the equal knowledge of the universe and equal will of acceptance of the universe will be added an equal delight in all the cosmic manifestation of the divine. Here, too, we may describe three results or powers of the method. First, we develop this power of equal acceptance in the spirit and in the higher reason and will, which respond to the spiritual knowledge. But also we find that though the nature can be induced to take this general attitude, there is yet a struggle between that higher reason and will and the lower mental being, which clings to the old egoistic way of seeing the world and reacting to its impacts. Then we find that these two, though at first confused, mingle together, alternating, acting on each other, striving for possession, can be divided. The higher spiritual disengaged from the lower mental nature. But in this stage, while the mind is still subject to reactions of grief, trouble, and inferior joy and pleasure, there is an increased difficulty, which does not act to the same extent in a more sharply individualized yoga. For not only does the mind feel its own troubles and difficulties, but it shares in the joys and griefs of others, vibrates to them in a poignant sympathy, feels their impact with a subtle sensitiveness, makes them its own. Not only so, but the difficulties of others are added to our own, and the forces which oppose the perfection act with a greater persistence, because they feel this movement to be an attack upon and an attempt to conquer their universal kingdom, and not merely the escape of an isolated soul from their empire. But finally, we find, too, that there comes a power to surmount these difficulties. The higher reason and will impose themselves on the lower mind, which sensibly changes into the vast types of the spiritual nature. It takes even a delight in feeling, meeting and surmounting all troubles, obstacles, and difficulties until they are eliminated by its own transformation. Then, the whole being lives in a final power, the universal calm and joy, the seeing delight and will of the spirit in itself and its manifestation. To see how this positive method works, we may note very briefly its principle in the three great powers of knowledge, will, and feeling. All emotion, feeling, sensation, is a way of the soul meeting and putting effective values on the manifestations of the self in nature. But what the self feels is a universal delight, ananda. The soul in the lower mind, on the contrary, gives it, as we have seen, three varying values of pain, pleasure, and neutral indifference, which tone by gradations of less and more into each other. And this gradation depends on the power of the individualized consciousness to meet, sense, assimilate, equate, master all that comes in on it from all of the greater self, which it has by separative individualization put outside of it and made as if not self to its experience. But all the time, because of the greater self within us, there is a secret soul which takes delight in all these things and draws strength from and grows by all that touches it, profits as much by adverse as by favorable experience. This can make itself felt by the outer desire soul. And that, in fact, is why we have a delight in existing and can even take a certain kind of pleasure in struggle, suffering, and the harsher colors of existence. But to get the universal Ananda, all our instruments must learn to take not any partial or perverse, but the essential joy of all things. In all things there is a principle of Ananda, which the understanding can seize on, and the aestheses feel as the taste of delight in them, their rasa. But ordinarily they put upon them instead arbitrary, unequal, and contrary values. They have to be led to perceive things in the light of the spirit, and to transform these provisional values into the real, the equal and essential, the spiritual rasa. The life principle is there to give this seizing of the principle of delight, rasa grahana, the form of a strong, possessing enjoyment, bhoga, which makes the whole life being vibrate with it, and accept and rejoice in it. But ordinarily it is not, owing to desire, equal to its task, but turns it into the three lower forms, pain and pleasure, sukha bhoga, dukkha bhoga, and that rejection of both which we call insensibility or indifference. The prana, or vital being, has to be liberated from desire and its inequalities, and to accept and turn into pure enjoyment the rasa, which the understanding and aestheses perceive. Then there is no farther obstacle in the instruments to the third step, by which all is changed into the full and pure ecstasy of the spiritual Ananda. In the matter of knowledge, there are again three reactions of the mind to things: ignorance, error, and true knowledge. The positive equality will accept all three of them to start with as movements of a self-manifestation which evolves out of ignorance through the partial or distorted knowledge, which is the cause of error to true knowledge. It will deal with the ignorance of the mind as what it is psychologically, a clouded, veiled, or wrapped-up state of the substance of consciousness in which the knowledge of the all-knowing self is hidden, as if in a dark sheath. It will dwell on it by the mind and by the aid of related truths already known, by the intelligence, or by an intuitive concentration, deliver the knowledge out of the veil of the ignorance. It will not attach itself only to the known or try to force all into its little frame, but will dwell on the known and the unknown with an equal mind, open to all possibility. So, too, it will deal with error. It will accept the tangled skein of truth and error, but attach itself to no opinion, rather seeking for the element of truth behind all opinions, the knowledge concealed within the error. For all error is a disfiguration of some misunderstood fragments of truth, and draws its vitality from that and not from its misapprehension. It will accept, but not limit itself, even by ascertained truths, but will always be ready for new knowledge, and seek for a more and more integral, a more and more extended, reconciling, unifying wisdom. This can only come in its fullness by rising to the ideal supermind, and therefore the equal seeker of truth will not be attached to the intellect and its workings, or think that all ends there, but is prepared to rise beyond accepting each stage of ascent and the contributions of each power of his being, but only to lift them into a higher truth. He must accept everything, but cling to nothing. Be repelled by nothing, however imperfect or however subversive of fixed notions, but also allow nothing to lay hold on him to the detriment of the free working of the truth spirit. This equality of the intelligence is an essential condition for rising to the higher supramental and spiritual knowledge. The will in us, because it is the most generally forceful power of our being, there is a will of knowledge, a will of life, a will of emotion, a will acting in every part of our nature, takes many forms and returns various reactions to things, such as incapacity, limitation of power, mastery or right will, wrong or perverted will, neutral volition. In the ethical mind, virtue, sin, and non-ethical volition, and others of the kind. These too the positive equality accepts as a tangle of provisional values from which it must start, but which it must transform into universal mastery, into the will of the truth and universal right, into the freedom of the divine will in action. The equal will need not feel remorse, sorrow, or discouragement over its stumblings. If these reactions occur in the habitual mentality, it will only see how far they indicate an imperfection and the thing to be corrected, for they are not always just indicators, and so get beyond them to a calm and equal guidance. It will see that these stumblings themselves are necessary to experience and in the end steps toward the goal. Behind and within all that occurs in ourselves and in the world, it will look for the divine meaning and the divine guidance. It will look beyond imposed limitations to the voluntary self-limitation of the universal power by which it regulates its steps and gradations, imposed on our ignorance, self-imposed in the divine knowledge, and go beyond to unity with the illimitable power of the divine. All energies and actions it will see as forces proceeding from the one existence, and their perversions as imperfections, inevitable in the developing movement, powers that were needed for that movement. It will therefore have charity for all imperfections, even while pressing steadily towards a universal perfection. This equality will open the nature to the guidance of the divine and universal will, and make it ready for that supramental action in which the power of the soul in us is luminously full of and one with the power of the Supreme Spirit. The integral yoga will make use of both the passive and the active methods according to the need of the nature and the guidance of the inner spirit, the antaryamin. It will not limit itself by the passive way, for that would lead only to some individual quietistic salvation or negation of an active and universal spiritual being, which would be inconsistent with the totality of its aim. It will use the method of endurance, but not stop short with a detached strength and serenity, but move rather to a positive strength and mastery, in which endurance will no longer be needed, since the self will then be in a calm and powerful spontaneous possession of the universal energy, and capable of determining easily and happily all its reactions in the oneness and the ananda. It will use the method of impartial indifference, but not end in an aloof indifference to all things, but rather move towards a high-seated, impartial acceptance of life, strong to transform all experience into the greater values of the equal spirit. It will use, too, temporarily resignation and submission, but by the full surrender of its personal being to the divine, it will attain to the all-possessing Ananda, in which there is no need of resignation, to the perfect harmony with the universal, which is not merely an acquiescence, but an embracing oneness, to the perfect instrumentality and subjection of the natural self to the divine, by which the divine also is possessed by the individual spirit. It will use fully the positive method, but will go beyond any individual acceptance of things, which would have the effect of turning existence into a field only of the perfected individual knowledge, power, and Ananda. That it will have, but also it will have the oneness by which it can live in the existence of others for their sake, and not only for its own, and for their assistance, and is one of their means, an associated and helping force in the movement towards the same perfection. It will live for the divine, not shunning world existence, not attached to the earth or the heavens, not attached either to a supracosmic liberation, but equally one with the divine in all his planes, and able to live in him equally in the self and in the manifestation. And thus ends chapter 12, page 720.